Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. Michael, before I jump in this afternoon, I want to do a quick sound check to make sure that the background noise where I am is not interfering enough that it's difficult to hear me.
I can hear you great, Jen.
Excellent. Thank you. So I'm very pleased to be joined this afternoon by Sri Devi, who was on the recent trip to Zambia and has joined us this afternoon to talk about her experience of participating in that. Welcome, Sri Devi.
Hi, Jen. Hi, Michael. Thank you so much.
Oh, pleasure. Thanks for being with us. So I'm hoping that our blogs that we posted during the trip kind of speak in terms of the details of the content and that sort of thing of the trip. But I thought it would be neat for you to talk a little bit. This is your second time coming, which I think you made so many interesting comments about that, kind of what you've seen, having it be the second time that you were there and the progression that you'd seen in the project and the various things that we were working on, et cetera. And I thought that would be a neat perspective for people to hear. So maybe just starting us off with a little bit about what your experience was of being on the trip and participating this time.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was really struck the first day when we arrived at the Living Compassion site, how when we step out of the car and there's so many children who always, of course, people hopefully saw that in the blogs, will surround the car and they're so excited to see us.
Yeah.
And I was so taken aback at how many children, because it's one of those, was this happening last time? And maybe because it was my first time, I wasn't as aware of it, but I just felt like this time, so many children came up and wanted to say, hi, how are you?
Yeah.
And normally they would stop there, I remember, in the first trip. But this time it was, hi, how are you? I'm fine, thank you. How are you? And they really were advancing conversation. There was two or three questions they may want to ask, like, what is your name? Or things like that. And I was really just struck by, and for me what dropped in was the commitment of that community to really invest in having conversation English, to doing the Living English program, to doing the Genki programs with the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see that from the preschoolers who are now, or the babies who are now in the slightly older preschool who are now in the first grades. And we would hear those stories that of the passing rate of those children who are all taking the English language oral exam to get into first grade. And it was a 100% pass rate, for the Living Compassion children. So I immediately saw that difference.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, we wrote about this several times in the blog, but it just strikes me so much because it seems like, well, okay, so you go from a simple conversation to a slightly more complex conversation, but it is huge because then every time I would think, well, let me try to have that conversation in Bemba. No way. No way. So to realize, of course, it seems so simple to us because we're native English speakers, but it's not simple. I mean, these are tiny little kids who don't speak any English at home at all. They're speaking only Bemba, of course, because almost all of their parents have not been to school, so they don't speak any English. And so all of their English is being at the property. And so, I was also struck by that. Just the growth in that was extraordinary, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the other things about it for me was that, so that was the little kids, and the bigger kids, really, I think, again, we talked about this in the blog, but the older kids took a huge leap of actually having conversations of, even I remember the day, I was out there a couple of days after you left, and them being able to say to me, where is Sri Devi? Where has she gone? And just a whole full conversation of asking me and engaging me in that way instead of just that simple, hello, how are you? Okay, I'm tapped. That's it. Now we just look at each other.
And I think the word that is really resonating and dropping in, and I was thinking about it, just reflecting on it prior to this conversation, was engagement. There was such this experience, of engagement, and I saw it in the conversation. I saw it in the reading program. Mm-hmm. I saw it in the typing program. I saw it in the conversations with the teachers. And it really was one of those moments for me, what occurred was, it's amazing what happens when people are willing to show up. Because those children, man, they are so many of them are so excited and so hungry and to learn and eager to learn. That, when I think about that first day of the reading program, where we hadn't even told anybody what was happening. And within 1 hour, you know, I think in one of the blog posts we talk about those seven boys, you know, headed towards the library. And just because they had heard that something was going on and they wanted to see what it was. And just that desire to engage was so strong.
Yeah, yeah, and that comment that Teresa would make, both about the books on, you know, the audio books, so you're talking about the books that people recorded during the bridge walk, we brought those over, and then also that typing program that, again, was such a sort of side detail, oh yeah, and we've got this typing program that we want to show people, but that Teresa making that comment, oh, you wait, she said, that word is going to spread, and sure enough, just without us saying anything, organically, more and more kids would show up over the days, and as you're talking, I'm seeing something that was dropping in for me so much during this trip was just that process of every time we go, we plant seeds, or I could even just say seeds are planted, you know, because it's not us going and planting them, but it's just, I was talking to Teresa about this, that process of, you know, we come, and as we're in the middle of it, you know, on the ground, having the direct experience, we think of things, and then we say, hey, you guys, what about this? And then they say, oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Well, what about this? Because, of course, they're the ones who actually are there every day and know what's going to work and how it might work. And so it's this amazing kind of synthesis of all of us bringing our own experience. We plant those seeds on a trip, and then the next trip is just a beautiful seeing, okay, well, which seeds took root and can really be watered and go to the next stage. And it's an amazing evolution that feels like it just keeps happening throughout each trip.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing that I also really, you know, really appreciated about this trip that we discussed at the beginning was just kind of sitting and listening to what was going on.
Yeah.
What was the conversation?
Yeah.
How were things going? And I have this, you know, I keep remembering this great experience of going to Charles's class, who would teach, you know, the older children in the community. And I remember sitting in on one of his classes, and there was about 8 children that day, and I was just so sitting there, so struck by, you know, I'm so curious. Like, these are children who no one's forcing them to show up. No one's requiring them to be in school. They're just here, and I'm curious as to why. And, you know, Charles was asking them, like, why are you here? And there was one young, and they were talking about reading, and why do you want to do the reading? Because they were saying, oh, we've heard about the reading program. We really like it. All of us want to do it. And one young man raised his hand and said something in Bemba, and the entire class started laughing. And I turned to Charles and was like, okay, Charles, you have to tell me what he said. And Charles said, well, he goes, I have to learn how to read. He goes, it's so important because otherwise, how can I open the newspaper and see what jobs are being advertised? And I was just so struck in that moment. It's just that beautiful, simple, practical insight of going, I got to read or else I'm not going to know what jobs I can get. And just how... And that moment of this, the planting of the seeds, the teacher's commitment to English, the cooperative commitment to feeding the children and keeping the property in a certain way, all will nourish that child and those children to be able to hopefully have that experience of opening the paper one day and saying, oh, there's a job. I think I want to apply for it.
Yeah. You know, and I think what you're saying is a perfect illustration of that piece of we would never think of that because it's not in our life experience, you know, the same. And so what they bring to it is the practical application of it. You know, I think about the interview I did with Teresa for last week, Good News, where that piece of, I mean, obviously it's a huge benefit for parents to have their kids in the program, but never putting it together that on a very practical level, it actually frees them up during the day to focus on being able to, you know, do their little small businesses that will actually be able to support their families. So it has a very direct impact, all these things that we do that we would never see, but that the team there can kind of connect the dots and really make that happen. You know, one other thing as you were talking, I was really struck by, I think, again, we talked about this in the blog, but Floriano, who's a young man who was part of a very small pilot project Rose did a couple of years ago to put a couple of folks through a skills program. And so he was taught to be a bricklayer. And now he is, you know, the most sought after bricklayer in Cantawamba because he cares, because he's doing a really good job. He's doing it well. He's well-trained. You know, he actually knows what he's doing. And so he's making a really good living. And I was so struck talking to Rose that, you know, in 3 or 4 years, the project is going to be at an amazing crossroads because a bunch of our kids who have we've been with since they were teeny tiny are suddenly going to be at that age where they're ready to be trained in a skill. And we really have the, you know, that's where the whole project is going to be turning a corner, going from sustaining kids to survive through childhood to actually helping them make that bridge into becoming adults who can support their own families. So, you know, when we were talking about that planting the seeds part of the project, I get goosebumps thinking about these next 3 years are so pivotal and there's so much opportunity for everything that we've been doing for the last 10 years to really make that final step into the full sustainability that I think we've been talking about for a while.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's, and I just, you know, I think about that typing program and watching the children come in. And I wish there was a way to translate that experience that, you know, everyone could have just been with us in the room. But literally, you know, there was kids out the door just kind of peeking in and going, okay. And we would be like, oh, 15 minutes. And they'd be like, okay, it's been 15 minutes. Like they were just so ready to jump on. And just watching them from that skills perspective, as you're talking about, so excited to learn a skill. And not just the children. Like, I was really also struck by the teachers, you know, Joy and Ethel and Beatrice and I think, you know, and Peter. Like, they, everyone was like, we want to learn. And I will say this, you know, as I'm coming back to the States, and while I was there, I was thinking about something Veronica said about reading. And she said, you know, reading is the backbone of education. And it really just dropped into me what incredible access we have in this country to education.
Exactly.
And so many of us are so privileged. And it really re-inspired me in coming back to going, I'm going to pick up more books. Because I would watch these children hover over those audiobooks, 7, 8, 9 of them, straining to get a chance to listen and to see. And you know, and just wow, just that wow moment of, oh my gosh, that excites me, and I can't wait to re-engage in that experience myself, because I see what a privilege it is when I see how these children react to having that opportunity.
Yeah, precisely. And I get goosebumps just thinking as you're talking that with that, as these kids do get older and access to learn the tools of learning, you know, technology and all of that, the opportunities for Sangha to participate in making that happen are going to be just so much fun and so big. So, gets better and better.
Yep. And I just have to say, though, what just seeing all of the work and all of the participation, and whether it's through, you know, people at the Bridge Walk who read the books, through the people who are doing different levels of donations, like it, man, it makes a difference. And it's just we show up, and we're there, and we're open, and we participate. And it's just by showing up every day, there's just amazing miracles that happen in every moment that we're able to be present to.
Yeah, I'm so glad. I'm so glad you added that piece. It's so true. I mean, I know for me, in the evenings, we come back from a long day writing those blogs, and just knowing that people are going to read them is fuels that process of the joy of writing them. So, you know, I just imagine, you know, we always say, thank you for reading the blogs. It's such a great participation. And that's absolutely true. Every single thing that everyone does to participate in that project makes a difference. So we're at the end of our time. Was there anything else you wanted to add in before we...
I would just add in that, you know, it's such a brilliant experience to be there on the ground, and such gratitude for the work, again, and the commitment of everybody in any way who has ever participated, because the experience of being there, I think, you know, what really was true for me is just the experience of being one with the heart. And I can't express enough the joy and the gratitude and the privilege it is to participate with the Sangha, to participate mm-hmm. with the men and the women and the children of that community. And what a great, I guess keep coming back to privileges. What a great privilege it is to just get to participate, and how exciting it is to be a part of something like this.
Absolutely true, and such a great benefit to everyone, because I know the participation, your participation in the trip and being there and all of that is just a huge blessing to the whole project. So it's a win-win, as we always say.
Yes, it is. It is. Thank you so much, Jen.
Thank you, Sridevi. Thanks for everything on the trip, and thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Take good care. Okay, bye-bye. All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Sridevi. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
I think Jen should always do the good news update from wherever she was.
Yeah,
the sound quality was perfect, wasn't it?
It was great. It was great.
Yeah, usually, you know, we're saying, could you speak up a little, Jen? Or, gosh, we're having trouble hearing you. I mean, she was loud and clear. It was great. That was a great conversation, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah. So, of course, I'd like to bring it back to here. Because I was listening to what Sridevi and Jen were saying about how those children are, about how the adults are, not just the teachers, but everybody on the property. You know, there's a chance to learn something. There's a chance to participate in something. And, I mean, you can be trampled in the stampede for people to get there. You know, me. I want to do it. And then there's us, right? Then there's us over here in privileged land. And I would say just about anybody listening to this would agree that they, too, are living in privileged land, right? And everything is so difficult. You know, life is so hard. My God. You know, I was stuck in traffic for 15 minutes. Right? Are you telling me that in order to be free of suffering, I'm going to have to direct attention moment by moment? Well, you know, I'm too busy. I have too much going on. You know, I mean, we are so, I just got to get hard on us here for a little minute. We are so flippin' spoiled. It is just pathetic. It really is. I mean, we all need to go there and see what it's like to have some little tiny thing offered to you that you never dreamed would be a part of your life. You didn't dream it would be a part of your life because you didn't know it existed.
Yeah.
Yeah? And with us, we're so sophisticated, so blasé, so just kind of bored and over it all. And you know, I mean, you know, if we had enough time, Michael, I could tell you about my problems. You know, I mean, truly, not to turn it over to self-hate, to turn it over to life, to turn it over to the mentor, to turn it over to somebody who has the big picture and loves us unconditionally, to say, oh, come on, get over yourself. Just get over yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah.
Because there's
and
just
it's good
so
to have the reminder.
Much... Yeah, there's so much available to us. I mean, we literally can have it all. Not have it all in terms of material. Have it all in terms of nothing interfering with a joyful life, because we know it's possible for us to get beyond those voices in our heads and get here, get present, and live in unconditional love. We know that. Now, those folks, you know, to get lit up, You just have to show them it's possible to type, right? Or to see that that voice coming through that machine is matching those words on that page, and that those pictures go with the, you know, I mean, what does it take for us to get lit up? You know, can we be that present to the miracle of intelligence animating us to life and what's possible for us? Can we say, you know, I want to participate like that. I want to be present like that. I want to be present. I want to be lit up, and I want life to direct me to where I can make the biggest contribution to life. Not whine about what's not working for me. Okay, it's not Sunday morning, is it? You know, sometimes I just can't help it. I think I was born to be one of those fire and brimstone. Well, not fire and brimstone, because for me, the preaching is on the lines of, along the lines of, come on, people, come on, joy awaits us, unconditional love awaits us. We just have to turn our attention and choose it. Maybe I was a cheerleader, huh? Probably a cheerleader in some former life. I don't know. Anyway, how are you, Michael?
I'm great. And the subject is great. And, I can see the callers focusing on this. It's a great topic to receive the joy that's here, that's right in front of us.
That's right here for us. Yeah. And from that place, we know 1,000 of those children. 1,000 children out of how many children around the world who are adults who are going to go to bed hungry every day of their lives. But those 1,000 children, for whatever reason, we all met each other. You know, we just got to come together at this time in this way, and we have the opportunity really to benefit from one another's existence, right? They can help us see the potential for us, and we can help them see the potential for them. And that is, to me, just a miraculous relationship.
Yeah, it is miraculous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. What a blessing.
So do you have announcements?
I do. We have opened registration for In This Way, I Do Most Deeply Vow to Train Myself, and you're invited to join us and participate.
Yes, so anybody who would like to take a giant step forward in getting over myself, just get up to that website and sign up for something, right? Sign up for it. Sign up for whatever keeps you connected enough to your awareness practice that you never lose sight of what is possible for us as human beings.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And this is a brand new retreat, and it includes guidance with you, Sherry, and the support of Sangha practicing together.
Yes, and brilliant workshop exercises. We can pretty much guarantee that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. And there's more info on locations and dates at livingcompassion.org/schedule.
Good.
And as we just heard from Jen and Sri Devi, the team is back from Zambia, and you can read how your generous donations are making a difference in the lives of now 1,000 children on the blogs, and you can find the blogs at livingcompassion.org/Africa/blog.
Mm-hmm. See their bright and shiny faces.
Yes, yes. And a couple of reminders, if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make Gas Show by pressing *6 and then 1 on your phone. And a reminder about 5-minute conversation and 1 topic, please. So
Thank
let's
you,
get
sir.
Started, Sherry. You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Linda from Alabama.
Well, how the heck are you? Haven't heard from you? Haven't heard your sweet voice in a long time. What's going on?
Thank you. Not much, a lot, and all that. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, everything and hardly anything.
Exactly. That's very true.
Yep.
Let's see. A topic. When we were in Pennsylvania, which is the last time I talked to you.
Are you there? No, Michael, we didn't lose her.
Looks like she's still there.
Linda?
There she is.
There she is. Okay. Pennsylvania.
Oh, I just lost her.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
Well,
watch for her, okay? Maybe she'll be back.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye out for her, and we'll talk to the next caller here.
All right. Thank you.
Next caller.
Wait, I heard her.
Live? Yeah, it's our next caller. Who's now live?
Oh, okay.
And would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, it's Esther.
Well,
can
my
you
goodness.
Hear me?
Yes, how are you?
I'm good. I'm learning to say I'm good.
Uh-huh. and you know it's true.
It is. Yes, it is.
Yes. Is it? Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, it can seem like such a little thing, but it's huge, isn't it? It's huge to actually affirm, well, I'm good.
Yeah.
And that's on every level. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's going on?
I wanted to, if it's okay, say something or share about what I read on your blog with respect to money and spirituality.
Yes, please.
Because what I see arising in my own, how do I say that? I'm changing from, I've been trained as a mindfulness teacher.
Uh-huh.
And I am in the process of trying to really bring it out there, but I have difficulty around the aspect of receiving money for it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking into that, you know, what's going on, because evidently, you know, I will sell things to be able to do certain, you know, what I feel is supportive for my own practice. I have, you know, no problem with that. But as soon as I have to ask for a financial compensation, it's like I just sort of block.
Yeah.
And not a little bit, but I mean really big time. It's like I even notice it now.
Uh-huh. Just talking about it.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to talk about it.
It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So I thought I would like to share this and perhaps receive some guidance towards it, because I'm seeing it, but I haven't yet been able to move beyond that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, we don't have to wonder why, right? But not the way that we kind of break things down, it makes perfect sense, because it's mindfulness training, mindfulness practice. And we can guess that you have a sense that this can be helpful in people's lives, which is why you want to do it and why you're interested in doing it, right? But if you're going to do something like that, then you shouldn't receive any compensation for it, because that wouldn't be spiritual. That wouldn't, I mean, it's a spiritual thing, and you shouldn't be compensated for spiritual things, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can work to pay for spiritual things. That's a good thing. Yeah, but you shouldn't take money for it, because that's not right.
No.
And so, of course, the bottom line of that is, then you can't do it. Now, you might be able to, you know, offer a little class for free somewhere in the evening or something like that, but the reality is, as much as egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate detests it when people say things like this, people if somebody gets something for free, they don't value it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's just how we're conditioned. If it's worthwhile, it costs something. And in fact, most people in this Western world, anyway, believe that, I don't know about the rest of the world, but I know about this world, that, and we're both included in the same reality.
Mm-hmm.
If it's more expensive, it's better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there you are. So you're going to offer this little course, and it's not going to cost anything. And so people may come, and they may not, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they may say they're going to come, but then if, you know, they realize that their favorite television show is on that night, they're not going to show up, right? And so very soon you won't do it, because why should you? Why if you want to practice mindfulness by yourself, you might as well just stay home and do that, right?
Yeah, but I hear what you're saying, and I even saw, because without going into too much detail, but what I saw, what happened was I was asked in a certain group if I would facilitate their sitting practice, and it was asked, you know, in the group without any. I had no idea this was going to happen. And I had said to myself a little bit before that, I'm going to start saying yes to life. So that happened, and I just started laughing. But then, of course, this is a sitting group that sits in a different manner than the training and that I have been following along with, you know, Living Compassion. And I was like, a facilitator? Me? Oh my gosh. And then, so I just laughed because I got it right away what was going on with, you know, ego. And then I was like, this is interesting because this is, okay, it's a practice, but I won't at least financially will not be able to be compensated for it. And then I nearly at night or in the weekend went like, well, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going back and forth. I'm like, this is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, now to me, of course, those are two very different issues.
Okay.
Right? So I'm right there with a sitting group. You know, I don't charge people for a sitting group.
Okay. Yeah.
But I certainly invite them to make donations.
Okay.
But if it's a class, if you're teaching a class on mindfulness and people are coming there to learn something that you're going to teach them to do, then setting a price on that, to me, feels very different. Now, I'm sure it's like attention and awareness. You know, everybody has their own definition of that. So I'm sure you could talk to a lot of people who would have very different opinions on that. You're only getting one. But to me, as I said, a sitting group is very different from a class, because a class, we would guess, has a finite duration. It's from this time to this time.
Yeah.
We're going to do it for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever we are. The charge for it is this much. You commit. I commit to it. You know, you're going to teach it. I commit to it. What the money that I give you is my commitment. And that's how you support yourself to be able to offer these classes to more people. Now, if on your own you have a sitting group that you facilitate, then and I find out about the sitting group, I might plan to come there for the rest of your life or my life, whichever ends first. And so I'm going to support that as part of my spiritual practice financially, simply because I'm supporting my spiritual practice, not because I'm necessarily supporting you in that sense.
Yeah.
Maybe just look at that and see what arises, because we can't mix money and spirituality. Well, then that'll make sure, you know, that we don't have too many people offering spiritual practice, because they will have starved.
Yeah. How do I make the click in my own I know it, but I'm still.
It's like anything else. So my encouragement, my encouragement with that is, pick a time and offer a class and put a price on it, and advertise it.
Okay.
And just see what happens. See what happens to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
See what the voices say. You know, just experiment with it. And then, and you could even talk to other people who do similar things. You know, you look around and see what people charge for things. What do they charge for a yoga class? What do they charge for a Tai Chi class and that sort of thing? And you know, and you just watch what happens. It's awareness practice. That's all we're doing all the time. We do stuff and we watch what happens.
I'm going for it. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Take care. Yeah,
bye-bye.
You too. Go back to sleep.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Esther. You're listening to Open Air. And Sherry, I'm glad to say that we have Linda back now.
Oh, good. Excellent.
Okay.
Hey, Linda.
Are you there?
Hey, I'm back.
All right. Okay. The last thing we established is that we spoke in Pennsylvania.
Right. And you told, and I was talking about that in the afternoons I would, on the days that I had the opportunity to be home all day, in the afternoons I would often get sort of down and I would go to the couch, basically, and to get some rest, which then would turn into, like, you know, a whole afternoon of sort of being miserable. And you said to give up the couch. And so I just wanted you to know that I have.
Oh, good for you.
I still have the physical couch.
You what?
But I still have the physical couch. But I don't lay
anymore. But you've changed your relationship with it.
I have. And so, and it is, you know, it's amazing in that it, I would have thought at that time that I had to lay down, that I was just so tired I couldn't not do it.
Yes.
And then I found that even though I may still be tired, I'm not saying I don't feel tired or down anymore, but I don't. But I manage to stay up, and I don't, you know, I get things done and those sorts of things. So, anyway.
Yeah, you don't feed that system. That's
right.
That's the difference, right? Yeah, you don't.
Right.
Yes. And I would bet it's true for you, at least it's true for me, that there are times when, in fact, I'm actually not tired. I feel tired, but it's actually an energy of depression. And get up and move around, go out for a walk, and plenty of energy there.
I can get focused if I can get into doing whatever, going for a walk, or get into whatever I'm doing, and I forget about it.
Yeah.
It goes away.
Yeah, the energy just changes, and you're in a different place.
Right. Of course, I would like it always to go away, and it doesn't always go away.
No. Nope. I mean, we have to continue to do what we know we need to do in order to stay present, stay in the life that we want to have.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I keep thinking that one of my problems is that I don't know how to say it, but I can't stop checking back. I am conscious, compassion, awareness, you know, and yet then I check back to see if I'm feeling any better. Well, I don't feel any better, you know, and it's like, I know not to do it, but I don't know.
Well, it's a habit. You know, it's a habit. And over time, it'll change. Because what's happening with you is you affirm what you are, and then you look back and you realize that you have looked back, and you realize that every time you look to conditioned mind, you're going to get the same answer. Now, it doesn't mean you don't feel different. It just means you're going to get the same answer.
Right.
So, right? So when
when things are kind of going well and I do it, it works, so to speak. You know, it's like I feel, you know, oh, gosh, you know, I feel that good feeling. And then when
yes,
I put in a
but
bad
I would I would suggest that you're actually not looking to conditioned mind in that case.
Okay.
What you're looking to is the fact that you feel good.
Ah, I see.
So okay, it's subtle, but check it out and see if that's true. That when you're when you're not, so I say, you know, I'm conscious compassionate awareness, or I'm unconditional love. And I haven't actually stayed with that experience. I've just said it. And then I look to conditioned mind, and conditioned mind says, no, you don't, you know, you still feel crummy. And I look back, and I look to feel crummy, and I do.
Right.
Yeah? But in the other case, you're feeling good. You look to see if you're feeling good, and what you're looking to is feeling good. And so you get the information that, yeah, I feel good. So you're actually looking to two different places under two different circumstances. But the thing about it is, each of them will always give you the information that confirms that they are what they are. So you're never going to look conditioned mind and get the response, you feel good.
Right.
It's just never going to happen.
You're sort of feeling bad, and so you say one of these things to yourself, like, I'm unconditional love. And
then you look to see if it worked.
And
of course it didn't, because all you did was say it.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
And so the alternative is to feel it.
Yes, first you say it. You say, I'm unconditional love. I choose unconditional love. I choose unconditional love. And if I were doing it, I would say, I choose unconditional love, and I would look around for what's beautiful in my environment. I choose unconditional love. And there's that bird singing. I choose unconditional love. The sky is a beautiful color. I choose unconditional love. Okay? Now, I'm changing the energy with each one of those, right? Because each time I look there or I say that, I feel that, right?
Right.
Now, when I look, I choose unconditional love. Do I feel it? Yeah, I do. As a matter of fact, I do feel it. Now, if I'm really, you know, doing the tongue and the sore tooth trick, then I can look back to conditioned mind. And conditioned mind will say, no, you don't. You don't feel any better. This is just a pack of lies. You're just lying to yourself.
Uh-huh. You might have felt better for just a second, but you're out, but it's not going to last. Yeah.
That's right. And you know what? It didn't. Because I went right back to that system, and it gave me the answer it's always going to give me. And if I'm in relationship with it, yep, that's how I feel.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I like that. So, one thing I'm hearing is don't just say it, but also look for something to focus on.
That's right. Make sure you're actually having the experience. I mean, you can even do the thing, you know, if you have the recorder, I choose unconditional love. Well, now, what does unconditional love mean to me? Okay, so love without conditions. There's nothing that can change that. There's nothing that would make that anything other than love. So no matter what goes on, the response to it is love. It all gets embraced within love. What's that like? Well, it's acceptance. It's welcoming. It is an embrace. It's like being held. It's seeing that everything is beautiful, you know, and I'm nattering along there. And as I'm doing that, I'm talking myself into an experience. Now, the voices would say, well, yeah, that's exactly what you're doing. You're talking yourself into an experience. But did I say anything that isn't true?
No. Right.
Nope.
No.
Now, what's not true?
I would love to talk myself into an experience. That sounds like a great idea to me.
Yeah. So what's not true is, so when I started with my little rant at the beginning of the show, you know, what's not true is that I'm sitting here, I happen to be sitting here on my couch, Linda, and I'm looking out at this beautiful sky through pine trees, and there is nothing in my entire world that is unpleasant or unhappy.
All
now,
right.
if I left where I am now and I started to say, well, you know, my knee is tweaking a little bit and I feel kind of hungry, and I'm a little bit tired, and, you know, I still have work to do before I could talk myself into a reality that does not exist that would bring great unhappiness. It would be possible
right.
to do that. But if I just stay with what is true, what is so, right here, right now, I'm a happy person.
Yay. Excellent. Mm-hmm.
Good. You got a little program there.
Cool. Yeah. We'll call you back next month and tell you about the other thing we talked about in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. All right. Good. All right. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Linda. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we're going to break to hear from our coaches program, and then we'll be back.
All right.
This year's theme is training to live in this here now. In any training, having a personal trainer helps tremendously. We can think of Zen Awareness coaches as personal trainers. The coaches have been trained by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching with any number of life issues or awareness practice in general, with special emphasis on recording and listening. We hear from folks new to practice and old-timers alike that awareness coaching provides the extra support their heart desires. And since coaches donate a percentage of their fees to Living Compassion, having a coach also supports practice. To request a Zen Awareness coach, visit sanghamarket.com. Go to Services under All Categories. Click on the little monk at the bottom and then follow the directions. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have more callers here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry. This is Carol. I've been reading several of your books with a friend every Sunday night, and we've been working with the Record and Listen.
Oh, so, very, very good.
Yeah, it is good, but having a few questions that seem central.
Okay, good.
Quite often when...
What are they? I'm ready.
Okay, quite often when I'm motivated to do a recording, when I'm in the middle of a EKC conflict. So I start out the recording by setting the scene very briefly, just saying a little tiny bit about what the conflict is like. I'm feeling left out over not being invited to the birthday party, or such a nice day and I have too much to do. Then when I listen to the recording later on, I can get the context of the mentor's commentary. And also it helps me to learn to recognize EKC's sneaky ways of attacking me personally.
Uh-huh.
So the question is it appropriate to put a little bit of the process on the recording? I notice sometimes afterward I'll listen to it and I'll connect with the problem. And it
yep.
kind of upsets, re-ups,
that's
re-upsets
right.
me.
That's right. So you have just answered your own question, my dear. Because here's the deal. There are two things about this. One, you could let the person having the experience talk about her experience.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one where you put the recorder in your right hand, and you let her talk about it. Now, this is not the same as letting egocentric karmic conditioning or self-hate get on there and rant about what's wrong with them and poor me and this
yeah.
is unfair and I hate this. Okay, it's not
yeah.
that. It's
yeah.
letting the person actually talk about how she feels.
Yeah.
And you turn it off. Yeah, you do that one. Then you listen. You listen to what she
oh.
says. You really listen
okay.
a couple of times. Yeah?
Okay.
Then
yeah.
you let the mentor talk back to her.
Oh.
Okay? But the best, and you could, with a good conscience, then erase what she said.
Oh, okay. Because I've had a couple of lengthy dialogues with mentor, which were very helpful in a big relationship problem, in which I put them in an entirely separate album so I wouldn't accidentally start listening to it, that I could listen if I was deliberately wanting to, but I wouldn't.
There's no reason to. There's really no reason to. And the thing about it is, you know, the mentor's wisdom is, it's not content specific.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So listening to that, if you hear, you know, you're fine exactly the way you are. You're a wonderful human being, and the only thing that ever gets in your way is listening to those lying voices. Okay, so you could listen to that, and it's universal. It doesn't matter. Morning, noon, or night. That's a fabulous message to get. So you're right. You don't want to put anything on there that triggers you into identification.
Okay, that's going to be quite a trick of discernment. You know, like I was reading one of the suggestions on the website, which said to record every opportunity throughout the day. And so sometimes I would say I'm tired or I'm hungry or something like that.
Okay, so that's good. But then what you want to talk about, so if I said I'm hungry, I'd say, you know, food is a wonderful thing. Food is truly a wonderful thing. And we're so lucky to have so many good things to choose from. Uh-huh. And, you know, and then you talk about what her, you know, you talk about her experience of food.
Yeah.
You know, or I'm tired. You know, it's great to feel tired after, you know, working hard or a great workout or that sort of thing. And then it's so delicious to be able to get ready for bed and crawl into that fabulous bed and be able to sleep and know that you're safe and protected and comfortable and you can just rest completely.
Okay. I think this has been very helpful to me, Sherry. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Check in with me anytime. It's my favorite subject in the world right now.
I can tell. It's because you stand so firmly behind it that I said, all right, I'll give this a try. And I've been enjoying
it. Well, I'll tell you a little story about this. I come from a long line of depressed people and depressing lives, and suicides and alcohol and drugs and every way that eating disorders, every way that depressed people have dealt with depression before depression became known for what it is. Okay?
Okay.
And so I started out with depression. I can't even remember a time before I experienced depression. Now, with awareness practice, and then I'm also fond of pointing out, you know, with all the classic things that go with difficulties like that, so OCD and ADHD and you name it, anxiety, I got to experience all of it. Doing awareness practice, getting completely to the other side of that, completely to the other side of all of that through awareness practice, right? And and as I'm fond of saying, and I'm sure you've heard me say, I don't think a person can be depressed and do recording and listening practice. So about a week ago, I began to experience for the first time in a very, very long time the experience of depression. And in fact, it's been so long since I've experienced it that it took me a while to recognize it. And then I got it. Wow, this is depression. Mm-hmm. And so I went into awareness practice high gear. And that cycle that used to last for months on end, if not years, lasted about 24 hours. And then I was completely out of it for probably 24 hours, and I went into anxiety, which also lasted for about 24 hours, and it was such an amazing opportunity to use recording and listening practice to move through those states. It was like I was being given a chance to see, does this really work, or am I just saying, I think it'll work. I'm pretty sure it'll work because, I'm pretty sure it'll work. It works.
And all the practice that you've done, gives you the experience to use it when you're in desperate times.
That's exactly right. But I use it. Here's the deal. I use it all the time. Recording and listening is just about, aside from sitting practice, is the happiest practice, in yoga. But recording and listening is the one thing that I will never go without in a day, ever.
So you're just doing it all the time and you're listening
all the time.
Wow.
When I'm exercising, I'm listening to recordings. When I'm driving in the car, I'm making and listening. If I'm just doing something like walking, I'm making recordings and listening to recordings.
Oh my God. In the car,
same thing. Yeah.
Wow.
First thing in the morning, last thing at night. Yep. When you've got an unconditionally loving life companion, you just want to take advantage of that relationship all
indeed.
You can, right? Yeah.
That's right.
All right.
Okay.
Let me know how it goes.
Okay, I will. Good.
All right, thanks. Bye. Hello? Michael?
Hi there. Sorry, I was muted again. Got to pay attention there.
Oh, no, now I've lost Michael.
That was fascinating what you just shared. Really, really interesting.
Well, in doing the email class, it's a good thing that I just don't worry a whole lot about what people think of me it's just pounding people over the head. You know, you've got to do this. You've got to do this. You've got to do this. And it's only because I am that convinced and that it is the thing that's going to turn their lives from suffering to happiness. And, of course, then when I read, people say, okay, I started doing it. I get it. I'm filled with gratitude, joy, love. You know, I think, okay, I just got to keep nagging. That's all. I just got to keep hitting people over the head until they hit joy. Then I'll leave them alone after that. Yeah, as soon as they hit bliss, they're on their own. But until then, I'm going to be the nag.
Yeah, I just thought of that starfish story, and you're saving one starfish at a time. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good image. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, I guess it's me. That's Mary Ann.
Hi.
I would say it is you, Mary Ann. How are you?
I'm good.
You didn't expect to be unmuted, did you?
I was not going to say what everybody else says. I didn't expect to get on. Anyways, I want to say I'm taking the email class, and I want to say ever since I started doing this practice, I have just had such amazing experiences of seeing my suffering and letting go. I've had tremendous opportunities to do that. And I'm just constantly amazed at having a tool that allows me to identify, okay, you're suffering. Well, what can you do? You can let go. And you asked me to phone in because I asked, is there any benefit to going back over childhood traumas? And you gave me some suggestions. But in the meantime, I had been doing recording and listening, and while I was recording, I had this amazing experience of just seeing, oh, it's like just such a big trap, and you can just step out of it. And I just couldn't believe the the laughter. I couldn't stop laughing because it just seemed like this is such a joke. We can all just step out of this.
Yeah. Yes, we can as soon as you see it, right?
Yeah, so
before we see it, You know, if somebody had said that to you before you saw it, if I said, well, just step out of it, you'd want to hit me, right? Because there's no way that's possible. I am suffering. This is real, right? But when you see it like that, you realize, oh, my God, it was what you said. It's possible just to stop. Yeah. Yeah. It's huge, isn't it?
So I'm an advertisement for recording and listening and for dropping it.
Good. Good. Yeah. The thing for people to know about that, the reason that I say things like, is there any benefit to mucking around in childhood stuff? No. Because, first of all, we have no idea. The person here, whoever that person is, wherever they are, has no idea what happened in childhood. You know, I'm certainly not the person who was there in my childhood. You know, that's no. I mean, I've gone through so many changes. So I have a memory, a story about something that happened to, in quotes, me when I was a little kid. Okay, well, who knows what happened, what were, you know, I don't know. But when we are present, what happens is that if there's something in this moment that relates to a moment in the, and again, we have to do the little quote marks in the sky, in the past, then an awareness of that connection will drop in. And we will be able to see that moment in this moment. And that clarity of seeing is what frees us, because we're present when we see it, which means it arises or drops into conscious, compassionate awareness. So a person can have the most god-awful image from the past drop in, and yet because it drops into conscious, compassionate awareness, there's great sympathy, great understanding, a desire to embrace, and there's freedom that comes as a result of that. But the person who goes back to kind of stir around in childhood is probably somebody who is looking to stir something up. And we don't want to do that.
Yes, I know this because I did stir something up, and that's why I asked the question was, mm-hmm. Oh, do I need to go and deal with this, or what can I do? So one of the things I realized is that the story wasn't really true.
Yeah.
It might have been true. It might have been true back then. I might have had that experience since then, but I also have been believing this story. It was really about being isolated and separated.
Yeah.
So checking it out was...
Yeah, exactly. And so probably, most of us, we could say that, right? There were times when we were young where we felt isolated or abandoned or, you know, all of those kinds of things that children feel that they go through. But then egocentric karmic conditioning takes it over and makes a thing out of it, makes an identity out of it, makes it who you are. And you have to stay in that story and suffer for the rest of your life. No.
I think that's part of the trauma drama, is there is an identification with the victim, and that is something else I could let go of.
Yes, 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 exactly. Because you don't want her to be a victim, right? You want her, you know, the logic of it is this. So if something happened to us, and it did, you know, one of my favorite things, I don't know if I said this to you, but one of my favorite notions is abusive childhood is redundant. You know, it's awful to be a child. It's awful to go through social conditioning. It's awful to bring a karma into a life and face socialism. I mean, the whole thing is just awful. Even with loving parents and happy circumstances, it's painful. It's really painful. And so what happens when ego gets hold of that is, okay, now then let's turn this into an identity, and you stay in that for the rest of your life. Well, no. If she felt isolated when she was a child, then we want to make that up to her, right? We want her now to enjoy all of the inclusion and belonging and connection that life offers. Why would we want to leave her stuck there just because it happened to her when she was a child? We wouldn't.
No, and that's what I saw. I just saw it's a joke, really, to be stuck in it, because it is so easy to step out of it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And, yes, it is. And, of course, what you've experienced with this that is the place that we're trying to get to in awareness practice is you were willing to let go of that identification with ego in order to step into life. And so many people aren't. You know, so many people are so identified with themselves as the ego, as that story, that's what makes me special. It's just who I am. And they're just not willing to let that go. They'd rather suffer than let go that delicious specialness. But when we've suffered enough, it doesn't feel delicious any longer, and we're happy to step out of it.
Yes. What I also recognize is that I just have to keep stepping out of it, because there is always something else coming up
that I have to get over.
I have to get my ego over this.
Yes, and drop the ego. Just dropping the ego, you're just stepping free of all of that old stuff so that you can just be here in life. We don't need an identity to be alive. Quite the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad to be. I'm glad to have that experience to point the direction for me.
Oh my goodness, yes. It's just wonderful. In fact, I don't know if I said this to you, but not in this form, because it would be too long for the email class, but I remember, I can clearly remember the moment that I got letting go, that I got that it was, I would have called it a thing then, that it's a process. It's something that happens that someone can do. And it feels fabulous. Those are the things that I got in the letting go. And I mean, I just started looking for things to let go, because I would so much rather have that feeling of letting go than the feeling of holding on to something.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I think that's probably what happens for the rest of my life, is just opportunities come up.
Yes,
to
yes.
keep letting go.
Yep, on more and more subtle levels. Now, people who look at it, for people who are identified with ego and looking at it, it looks like you're giving up stuff. But when you understand letting go, you realize there is nothing. There is nothing in this life that I would hold on to instead of having freedom. There's nothing I want more than freedom. It's an exciting adventure.
Well, I'm so glad that I discovered this practice.
Me too. I know the feeling.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take good care.
Okay.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Marianne. And that's a great way to end a great show, Sherry.
It is, isn't it? Seems like it just kind of flew on by.
Yes, and heard some new folks, so that was lovely also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Talk to you next week. Thank you.
Okay. Good night, Michael.
Good night.